Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Changing Tides podcast. In each episode, we invite guests to have honest conversations about their mental health journeys with the goal of destigmatizing mental health within the Asian American Pacific Islander community. Due to the nature of the podcast, we'll be discussing a variety of mental health topics and possibly triggering experiences. While we and the majority of our guests are not trained professionals, we encourage you to practice self-care while listening and seek professional guidance if you or a loved one is in need of support. With that said, let's start the episode.
Hello, my name is Christine Nguyen, and I would describe my mental health journey as a very winding path, much like a lazy river, but you know, we all get there eventually.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the newest episode of the Changing Tides podcast. I am your host, Matthew Yonemura. Thank you for waiting patiently if you have been waiting for these episodes. We got really busy with Ripple Effect, which we just hosted back in June, which feels a lot longer ago than it has been. This episode is coming out about a month after Ripple Effect, but Ripple Effect feels, sheesh, like 2-3 months ago at this point. It was a great event. We had over 450 people attend. We fundraised over $90,000. And I think it went off really well. We were able to honor a lot of different families and individuals that we've lost to suicide at Ripple Effect. And it was just a really great gathering of folks. We're really happy with how that event went. So it was a lot of work, a lot of coordination, but it was really successful, I think, largely due to the enthusiasm of the families that we honor at this event. They really work hard to make sure that their friends and families are able to attend and that they enjoy the event. So thank you to the families that we honor at Ripple Effect. And thank you to the volunteers. We have such a great volunteer basis that is so enthusiastic about working with us. We get some people who, this year especially, were first-time volunteers with Changing Tides. And they come across us or they follow us on Instagram and then they reach out to volunteer. And upon leaving their shift or emailing afterward, people are always so enthusiastic about how much they enjoyed helping us out and wanting to come back. So this is kind of a long-winded intro, but I'm kind of just sitting here as I'm recording this and thinking back about the event and seeing all the people come together, both the attendees and the volunteers and the LTSC staff. It made all the sunburns I got worth it, because those sunburns I got at Ripple Effect were, oh boy, they did a number on me. But we're back recording the podcast. We're going to be, I'm pretty confident I'll be able to keep it consistent and we won't need to go on another hiatus for a little bit there. So welcome back if you're a longtime listener, and welcome if you're a first time listener. I'm excited for you to hear this interview that I had at Little Tokyo Service Center because it was with a new hire. It was with, not super new, but they've been here since March, and I've seen a lot of growth since she started with us. One thing I want to make clear, because there's been a little bit of confusion, she is not my assistant. She is the Changing Tides Assistance Coordinator. So she just helps out with the program, and she's been doing such a great job. She's brought a lot of new ideas to the table, and she's worked hard, and we give each other little nudges here and there, but at the end of the day, I know that when it comes to the work, it's the work, and we set aside the silliness, and we focus up, and she's been a huge help. So in this interview, you hear some of those nudges, but I enjoyed this interview because I was able to get to know her better and more about her story, and I'm just really excited to see what Changing Tides holds with both of us working together on this program. So with that said, I'm going to go ahead and let you hear this interview that I had with the Changing Tides Assistant Coordinator, Christine Nguyen. Christine, thank you for being on the podcast.
You're welcome.
I want to talk first about this winding road, like a lazy river that we all get to eventually. Why did you describe it as such?
Because I feel like for life, typically people always imagine that there's a linear path of what you're meant to do regarding education, finding a career, starting a family. But in my opinion, it's more like a river. We all end up on the same path somehow, regardless of where we start. And some people might go a little bit faster, and they got a little bit of that turbulence. And other people, you're just kind of there for the ride, very much like myself, where we're just existing in the moment a lot of times. So I guess that's why I would describe it as that sometimes I feel like I'm just going down along the way with no clear direction, but then the river is there, and it's always going in a constant direction. You kind of just get pulled along regardless.
So I put this question later, I don't know why, but I think we should start first with what your title is with Changing Tides and when you started here.
So I started with Changing Tides in March, I believe March 6th exactly, and my title at Changing Tides is Assistant Coordinator.
So, because I didn't really introduce that part of it yet, so I figured it would make sense for me to explain why we're here. We're at the Little Tokyo Service Center recording this, where we both work together. Very rare we're both here at the same time. But I want to now go back to the original order of questions I had. When would you say your mental health journey began?
My mental health journey began, I would say, a little bit after graduation. I suffered greatly from depression post-grad, and I succumbed to it. I wasn't really looking for a way out. I just let it eat at me until a very specific moment, actually. I would say maybe a year and a half ago. I don't remember what year exactly. I remember specifically it was in November, though. And what triggered it was another story on its own.
And when you say post-grad, this was college post-grad?
Yes,
Got
college
it.
post-grad.
So when you say you succumbed to it, like what was that like? Was it like, I think depression could take a lot of different routes, right? Was it just like the low energy? Was it socially? Like how did it like come to fruition, I guess?
It was a little bit of everything. With post-grad, you realize that the one thing identifying you, being a student, is something you no longer have. You lose any sense of identity. And I wasn't someone who had any particularly interesting hobbies that I could pursue or have any exciting passions. I just worked to work. I attended school to attend school. So once I graduated, I felt like I had no purpose. And then it was also during the pandemic, where everyone was laying off, it was hard to get a job, you didn't really get to see people, so it really started to affect my sense of self-worth very negatively. So just not knowing who I was, why am I here, what am I doing, and I just succumbed to it. I didn't try to fight it like other people. A lot of my friends recommended I try to go to therapy or get on medication, but I refused to, or I would say I would do it just to make them happy, but would never actually pursue it because I would think that I can get out of this on my own. This is just a little phase. Like, I'll get through it once I do this, once I do that. But then you never actually do it. You just get stuck in that rut sometimes.
Would you say there was a turning point, or did it kind of just naturally happen where you kind of found, I mean, we're still battling, right? It's the winding road, the river, but like obviously like you're working here now and there's been growth, right? So it's like how did you eventually turn the corner? Was it gradual or was there like a moment when you were able to kind of
I guess the moment that started my more healing journey was a very specific moment in November, actually, when I was dating someone who was a horrible person to me. He would just put me down, and then when I told him I wanted to improve myself and that if I were to do something, he can point it out to me and I wouldn't be offended, rather than be proud of me or anything like that, he said to me, "You're only doing this to make people like you." And for some reason, that really, really hurt. And it started my self-healing journey, I started reading this book by the book The Body Keeps the Score by Dr. Van der Kolk, and it kind of made me realize that a lot of my depression wasn't as self-imposed as I thought, but more so from trauma, and it kind of jump-started this whole healing journey.
Also, when you said that what that comment really hurt for some reason, I don't think it's for some reason. I think it's very, that's like a very hurtful thing for someone to say. So I hope you're able to get out of that situation
Yeah.
soon
No,
after.
he was a horrible person.
Okay. You want to say his name? No,
No,
I'm
no,
just
no,
kidding.
no,
I'm just
no.
kidding. Okay, so I think to backtrack a little bit, because I know you didn't grow up in California, but like just for you to share your own story, where did you grow up and how did your environment impact your mental health, if you would say it did at all?
So my growing up story was very all over the place. My parents had met in California, but they moved from state to state to state a lot, like having little businesses depending on where the market was. So I was born in Missouri, raised in California, and then sent with my grandma and then sent back over to my parents. And at this time they had moved over to the East Coast, where we lived in like Massachusetts, Connecticut, and then eventually Rhode Island, where they settled, bought a house, and had my brother. And I guess it did have an effect on my mental health just because Rhode Island isn't very international, I'd say. Like, it's majority Italian or Portuguese families, and they're all like very like fifth, 10th gen or something. We did not have many Asian people over there, and of the Asian people in my high school, me and all my cousins, it was the only time in the world where you could ask a Vietnamese person with the last name Nguyen if you guys were related, and we had to say yes.
Wait, what do you mean
And
you had? What do you mean?
because Nguyen is such a common last name that
Yeah.
usually if you ask like, oh, I know so and so Nguyen, are you guys related? You'll be like, no,
Right.
that's like kind of racist.
Yeah.
But like now I had to say yes because they're all my cousins.
Oh, like it's the rare occasion where you
Yeah,
actually are.
yes.
Okay.
And being as though there was no Asians there, it did affect me mentally growing up because I wanted to be white. My idol growing up was Ashley Tisdale. I wanted to be a blonde white woman growing up. And in high school, I even made fun of myself for being Asian, beat them to the punch. And I would call myself the chink. I would just use all those derogatory terms towards myself because I wanted to fit in, and that's kind of how you did, by making fun of yourself for being the other. And it's only until I moved to California and was surrounded by like-minded people and like-cultured people where I kind of realized, like, hey, that's not really a great way to live life, putting yourself down for others' comfort.
So, when did you move to California? And I guess, was it instant when you realized like you didn't have to beat people to the punch with the joke? And like, I guess, when did you, or I guess, before I even get there, how did you kind of reclaim comfort and pride in being Vietnamese?
Pride in being Vietnamese specifically is something that is a lot more recent for me, I would say within the past year or two. Prior to that, I had pride in being Asian, but even within like the Asian community, Southeastern Asians are very often put down. So being Vietnamese, Cambodian, Laos is seen as the poor Asians, like the ghetto Asians. And it's the East Asians, like Japanese, Korean, and Chinese, that are highly desired. So even though I did leave the East Coast and stop being the punching bag, I was the punching bag in a different way in California, where thankfully, like my high school was majority Vietnamese, so it wasn't very culturally. It was more just my own personal self-worth, I'd say. And then in college, then that became a bigger issue of being Vietnamese because everyone else was Chinese, Korean, they were the rich Asians. I was the jungle Asian. So I just kind of always going to beating them to the punch, basically.
So I thought you moved to California for college. It was before that.
Before.
So when did you move to California? And I guess how did that change either positively or negatively, your mental health?
I moved to California at 15 years old by myself. My parents still lived in Rhode Island, and then I moved over here with an uncle and aunt who lived over here with their son. And I'm not sure how it affected my mental health, because back then I was much in denial about my own mental health, that even though I did suffer from really bad social anxiety and depression, I kind of thought I was making it up and it wasn't as bad as to be clinically diagnosed or anything. So I'm not sure how I would say it affected my mental health.
What was the move like? Because obviously the Asian population is larger. So was there any other like culture shock or just like things that you noticed when you moved back? Because how old were you when you moved? Because I know you were raised in California. So like when you came back and you were kind of more aware of things, what was the change that you saw compared to like Rhode Island?
Well, when I say raised in California, I mean literally for like a year or two.
Okay.
So I was in the East Coast for a majority of my life.
Got it.
And it was a big culture shock moving over to California, just being that, more people, more ideas. Rhode Island, I guess it's like a little bit more homogenous since it's like all a similar type of people. And then over here, I was exposed just to a lot of new ideas. I had boba for the first time. I didn't like tea for a while. I finally started eating sushi. Like, I became more Asian when I moved to California. Prior to that, I was very much like eating pasta. Like, our idea of going out was going to Friendly's, which is basically the Rhode Island equivalent of like Applebee's or something.
Let's fire
Yeah, so
that.
going to Korean barbecue, hot pot, like all the basic California stuff was something I wasn't used to. And I felt very uncultured sometimes. I felt like I was the little dumb hillbilly sometimes.
Really?
And not to mention, people made fun of me for my accent too, because I
Really?
had an East Coast accent.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because Rhode Island, like Boston, we drop the R's when we speak, like pak the kha and habad yad. So my accent was like that too until I started teaching English and I had to like fix my accent basically. But yeah, I was most definitely the new kid. I stood out, and not in always like the best ways.
Do you mind if I ask what part of California you moved back to?
Orange County, Garden Grove
Oh,
specifically.
okay. Got it. So, oh, Garden Grove. So there was still a pretty big AAPI population.
It's like majority Vietnamese.
Yeah. Okay, because when I think of Orange County, I think of like the predominantly white areas.
Not like
Okay.
Newport or anything.
Got it. Got it. So you go through this high school experience, and then I know you went to UCLA. So, was it a priority for you to stay in California, do you think?
Well, the whole reason why I came to California was to attend a UC,
Oh, yeah.
because as out of state, you would have to pay out of state tuition. So just the whole reason why I came to California was to get in-state tuition. That was the
Got
whole purpose of it.
it.
And sadly, you have to attend high school in California for 3 years
Oh,
to get
no.
in-state tuition. I was only here for 2 years, so despite my big brain plan, I still had to pay out-of-state tuition at UC Santa Barbara prior to dropping out because I didn't like the school. And then I took my gap year, reapplied to UCLA where I got a full ride,
Wow.
and stayed there until graduation,
Wow,
basically.
good for you. I didn't know you got a full ride. I'm learning so much. Like, I didn't know you had a brother.
Yeah.
Is your brother still on the East Coast?
Yeah, he lives with my mom.
I didn't know you had a brother.
Yeah, my
That's
younger
crazy.
brother.
I had no idea. You do not give older sister energy.
Yeah, very much older brother energy sometimes.
I feel like if I were to guess, either you would either have had a much older sister, like much older, or only child.
Nope, younger brother, and I used to beat the shit out of him too.
That's kind of scary because you're like, how tall are you?
He's shorter than me. It's
Poor
because we're
guy.
Viet, we're not very tall.
I'm Japanese, we're not very tall.
Yo, like Vietnamese people, bro. We're not exactly known for our, like, our athletics or
That's
height.
fair. That's fair. Okay.
We have to be
Anyway.
small to fit in the holes in the jungle.
Oh my goodness. See, you're beating people to the punch and no one's even gonna make fun of it.
Man.
You're still beating people to the punch. There's no joke though. No one's gonna make the joke.
Oh, the joke is me and my brother.
Okay. Well, anyway, UCLA.
Yeah.
How was that experience? And I mean, you stuck it out, but like, how was it for you? for your mental health? How was it for just your college experience and just growth in general?
Oh, UCLA was amazing, especially compared to UC Santa Barbara. Like, the school culture is just a lot different. I made a lot more friends. I joined a lot more activities than I would have. I just became a much fuller person by attending UCLA. It's a great school. And my only issues with UCLA would be my own fault, where I wish I took advantage of more opportunities available to me while I was still there, rather than just being a little menace and going to school and then going to party after.
How many years did you end up staying at UCLA?
Altogether around 2 years. I took a quarter off, and then I took an extra quarter or two to finish because I took that quarter off.
Got it. And no hate to UC Santa Barbara. This is Christine's opinion, because we have met great people who go there. Nick Song's frat, which name is escaping my mind, has supported Changing Tides. So, and Lin Vo also did her undergrad there. So no hate to UCSB.
Yeah, no, I was a gaucho.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Just, we want to make that clear.
Yeah, that no, it's a hate. Wonderful school. Just not my vibe.
Yeah, just that was for Chris. Okay, good. I just want to make sure. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So go to school, and then you didn't immediately work at Changing Tides. So post-grad, you had your, that's when your mental health journey started. But work-wise and in the workplace, you know, how did you navigate finding work post-college, and how did that journey evolve?
My journey after college was 10 types of messes on top of each other. I graduated into the pandemic, and I really wanted to work in entertainment at that point, but entertainment companies weren't exactly hiring. If anything, they were laying off. So I had to put that on halt, and I had to just look for a job, any job, essentially. So yes, during the pandemic, there were clubs that were open underground, and unfortunately, I was one of those people who participated in it, and I did work as a promoter for that club, as well as waitress for that club during the pandemic, where later I would start to work as a bottle girl. And from working in that bottle girl job, I was met lots of very influential and wealthy people who would offer me other jobs. So from there, I started working in cannabis briefly, but I didn't particularly really enjoy the office work for that. So after that, I started working in crypto. And crypto was great for a while until the crash and everything. And then after that, a little bit more bottle girl, and I was offered a job later at Activision, where I started working for video games. And that was a great time. Not really. Until it actually really negatively impacted my mental health working at Activision, because a lot of my sense of self-worth was not there. They didn't really congratulate me on the things I did do right, but they were very quick to put me down when I did anything wrong, even just an email wrong. So work very much negatively impacted me mental health wise. And then even my job as a bottle girl severely negatively impacted me too, while I didn't realize in the moment, because it's fun, you're drinking, you're partying, you're meeting all these like super rich, famous people, and you think you have it all. And especially when these people, they're calling you like pretty, they're like congratulating you on things, it gives you a big ego sense of self. But then that became my entire identity. I became entirely defined by my looks and my status rather than who I was. And so after I quit Activision, I kind of quit everything. I broke down. I did nothing but lay in bed for months, not moving, not doing much of anything. Occasionally, I'd go out with friends. And then I met, from crypto, I met an amazing mentor who gave me lots of advice in life. And he had gone through his own depressive phase. And he had told me what had helped him. And from there, I just started my own little journey upwards, listening to great people, very like enlightening experience, meeting all these people. And then I realized that if I am going to live in this world, I want to do, and I have to work, I want to do work towards something I actually care about. entertainment, it's nice, but it's just an ego stroke. And I didn't really like video games. I didn't like tech that much because there's too much politics involved and like just not exactly my thing. So I wanted to work specifically for a nonprofit for either mental health or women's health, such as a women's crisis shelter. And when I Googled this, Changing Tides was one of the first ones to pop up for a job. It wasn't through LinkedIn or Indeed or anything. It was like a separate nonprofit site. And I applied, received no response, saw the job posting again on LinkedIn, applied again, reached out to them through LinkedIn, and eventually got a response, but I was getting a little bit desperate and was interviewing at Sony, but I didn't really want to work in entertainment anymore. So very thankful everything worked out with Changing Tides.
So that job posting happened to go up like right before our holiday break. Yeah. So I don't know if we saw, I actually don't know. I wasn't in charge of the job posting, but yeah, it happened to be right before the break. So
I think Jana was in charge of it. She mentioned
yeah.
the website too.
Oh, so she knew.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. But yeah, I apologize. But it wasn't my fault. So you said how you came to wanting to work here, but have you learned anything? I mean, you don't have to say you've learned everything about mental health. Like, this isn't necessarily a promotion. I want to ask you honestly. Like, have you gained anything mental health-wise since beginning to work here?
Yes. I think just the way I was raised and the people I surround myself with, it's a very much a dog eat dog world that everyone's out for themselves. The whole point of us going to a lot of these events isn't even necessarily because I like going to these events. It's for networking purposes. It's very much I scratch your back, you scratch mine, which sounds very unfortunate and shitty, but that's just how Los Angeles works, especially if you're working in a field like entertainment or even tech. So, being at Changing Tides and seeing people who actually genuinely care has kind of rocked my world a little bit, where I was almost in disbelief sometimes because if anyone's even familiar with tech and like even you're familiar with FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried. Even Sam Bankman-Fried, who was a philanthropist and he donated tons of money to like, nonprofits, charities, etc. Once he was outed with everything, a lot, even in his text, he said that Silicon Valley is a lot about altruism, where everyone's trying to help everyone, but it's to look good. It's like this like Western game we Westerners play, as he put it. So I was very used to people doing great things for people, but it's always for themselves, not because they just want to. So that's what I was used to. So coming to Changing Tides and seeing people take time away from their actual like work days, their weekends, their personal time just to help others with no benefits to themselves whatsoever. It's really opened my eyes. It's changed me, and I feel like I'm learning a lot from that. It's definitely very different than what I'm used to. And it's a good different though.
It's crazy though, because this was like my first, I guess you would call it a desk job. So like this is all I know. But then like not just you, but other people have come in from other industries, and they've said, like, not about me as their supervisor, but about their other supervisors within Little Tokyo Service Center, like, oh, that just threw me off because I'm not used to my boss like actually caring about my mental health. So it's just weird to hear how some other workplaces have really damaged one's mental health. So it's all a cover, of course. We don't really care. No, I'm just kidding. Of course we care. But no, that's, I guess I'm curious, like, when you didn't believe it, did you think it was just like a ploy for you to like put your guard down? Or like what was you're going through your mind of like why they would fake that, I guess?
Well, being In UCLA, I did do a lot of Asian studies just for my own purposes, curiosity, and something within like Asian communities. And even when I was a bottle girl, I worked at a Korean club. So I was interacting mainly with Korean, Chinese, like Asian, not as many white people. And something that Asians are known for is keeping face, essentially. That we're always trying to look good to other people, that we never want people to know about our struggles, we never want people to know about our poor ideals or like any poor moral doings. We always want to look like the good person. Asians are very much humble bragging about everything all the time too, or even like just bragging. I mean, Crazy Rich Asians, like the name itself is very, in your face about that kind of thing. So when people are kind, I just kind of assume it's to save face, to keep face. It's not that they're bad people by any means, but it's just very much ingrained in society that, oh, you have to be nice, but then you can shit talk them later. Like, it's like a common thing in Japanese, like Japanese society, that their Japanese people are known to be very polite to your face, but then, like, they'll shit talk you behind your back. Vietnamese people were a little bit different. We'll shit talk you to your face and behind your back, and we're very loud.
I hear you. Yeah, there's a lot of different, very traditional stigmas within the AAPI community. They're different, the different Asian Americans or different Asians that I think slowly the more the younger generations are trying to change. Like, I definitely know what you mean about. I mean, that's still a thing within Japanese Americans, especially with some of the older generations of, gossip and stuff. I think that's a lot of Asian Americans, but yeah, I think that's slowly changing, I would like
Hopefully.
to think, right? But I was joking when I said we don't really care about our volunteers and our staff, because like my next question about ripple effect, like that's when our like that was your first big event with Changing Tides. And that's like a really great example of our volunteers and our staff like coming together for something that we really care about, because it's a lot of planning, it's a lot of time, and it's a long day. So what was it like for you to experience your first big like Changing Tides event?
It was amazing. I even invited my friends to it, and they all had the same reaction that it was very nice to see a community come together. That none of us were very in line with that thinking. That again, we all come from a very different background. We come from nightlife, essentially, a lot of us. So that's what we're used to. We're very much used to the Hollywood glitz and glamour, that it was a little bit different getting to see families come together just to celebrate someone's life, basically, to contribute and do all this great stuff. Because again, I'm used to putting an effort to meet people for the sake of meeting these people, not because I enjoy doing this. So being at Ripple Effect and just seeing the effect it has on people and seeing everyone come together just for the sake of coming together was really different. It was really nice and eye-opening overall, and it kind of shows me that this world isn't as negative as I've often painted it out, and that my friends are right, and I do have a very biased view of things because I am surrounded by a very particular type of people.
In terms of the work that you did on the day, was it more overwhelming than you thought? Was it calmer than you thought? Or, just what was it like for you behind the scenes?
Behind the scenes, it was fine. It was what I would imagine it would be, like logistically too. And I wouldn't say it's too overwhelming or like not overwhelming. It's perfectly fine. And of course, you get like little moments of panic, but otherwise, it was great.
You seem very calm. So you did a good job. You, at least, I don't know what you're feeling internally, but you did a good job of at least keeping calm outwardly, which I think like in a leadership role, yeah, you did a good job. So, we're coming towards closer to the end. I have like silly quickfire questions at the end, but how do you care for your mental health when you're in times of lows or anxiety or stress?
So I am on at least three different types of medication, so I might not be the best person to ask, because by default, I am very calm nowadays just because Lexapro hits.
Oh, it does.
It really does.
It
Like
really does.
I flew on a plane last month or something, and it dropped, and I my heart did not skip a beat.
Really?
Yeah, I felt great. I felt great. I still feel great, but yeah, I'm medicated, so. But if I wasn't and I felt an overwhelming sense of emotions and I had to consider my mental health a little bit more, I would say that I have a very bad habit of just completely shutting down where I won't answer any calls. I'll just be in my room alone. Like no one can reach me, including my own parents. The only person who will be able to reach me is my roommate, and that's only because she lives with me. And during those moments is when I recharge, and it's very much its own valley of like uphill, downhill battles. And during that time is when I kind of, ruminate, hurt myself a little bit, but then eventually get back up on my feet and then leave the room and integrate back into society.
I think, when you said like you don't feel any stress or anything, I think that's how a lot of people go through this world. Because I'm like, do you literally mean no stress, or it just takes a lot more to get you stressed out?
Oh, well, without medication, I get stressed, but I kind of ignore it, but it builds up, and like eventually I have a blow up point. But then on medication, it's a lot easier for me to detach from my emotions and recognize why do I feel that way, and then counteract the problem rather than try to fight the emotions itself. So I've made a lot of big steps in my mental health. And being able to step away from the negative emotions associated with stress is one of the really big aspects I'm proud of.
I think you're just explaining healthy coping, which is, I think, so I think you are a good person to ask. But like outside of work, like how do you unwind? Like, do you like to just chill? Do you go out? Like, what do you do to kind of blow off steam, I guess, like on a regular basis?
I like to touch puppies. And I have been known to romp around K-Town nightclubs, but I am very fortunately sober now. So nowadays it's more so just hanging out with the girlfriends or going to events rather than just drinking your problems away, going clubbing, meeting people, because it's not always the savory type of people either that you meet in nightlife.
Well, coming towards the end here, is there anything else I didn't ask or anything else you'd like to say before I ask some quick fire questions?
No.
Okay. If you could invite three people to dinner, dead or alive, who would they be?
Three people to dinner, dead or alive. Three people to dinner, dead or alive.
I'll throw in fictional as
Do
well.
they all speak English? Or like will they speak a common language
Okay,
with
well,
each
here's the
other?
thing. How many languages do you speak? Let's start there.
I speak English, French, Vietnamese, and Japanese.
So, I wanted you to flex that because it's really cool to me. But let's just, in this situation, they all speak as you at least understand them all. They all understand each other, whatever language that
Okay,
is.
so they all at least understand each other.
Yes.
Okay, so I would very much like to Sigmund Freud, Confucius, and Plato.
Okay. What is something pe most people do not know about you?
I'm not very picky either.
Like, what are the things that you're like, no?
I refuse to eat anything with onion. I hate the taste of cilantro because it tastes like soap to
Oh, you have
me.
that gene.
I refuse to eat raw, like, not always, but I don't like raw vegetables. Like, I don't like raw tomato. Like, I'll eat it in the soup or if it's cooked, but then not raw. And then I don't like chocolate with any fruit.
Okay.
I think it's really weird people that do that. And I need my fruit separate from dairy things.
That I get that.
Yeah, no, like,
I kind of get
Like, I'm very particular about, like, how I have certain types of food.
that. Don't eat onion.
No, I
That's in
hate onion.
everything.
I know when I, oh, I don't like bean sprouts either. So when I eat pho, it's just like meat and noodles.
Well, there's
And
onion in that too.
yeah, I take it out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So you don't even like the flavor of onion?
Like, I'll be okay with the flavor. I don't want to bite into any onion,
What if it's
though.
like sauteed?
Which kind of onion? The green or white?
Like a white onion.
No, not even sauteed.
Wow, that's
I'll spit
crazy.
it out.
That's interesting. You've traveled a lot. Where is somewhere you have yet to travel to, but you would love to?
Europe. I've always seen like a lot of these vacation videos of Europe, and even though it can get a little bit nasty sometimes, I think it'd be fun to try just because I've been in every like big Asian country at this point. I haven't really been anywhere else aside from Asia. No Africa, no Europe. Australia only has one country and one continent. No, or I haven't even been to South America yet. No Mexico, despite us living right there.
True. But yeah, you've been like all throughout Asia, huh? That's cool. What is a hidden talent that you have?
Hidden talent. I really freaked my brother out by being able to move like my toes separately. But
Like one at
that,
a time?
yeah.
Oh!
Yeah, no, my brother finds it really fucking weird.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he doesn't like it when I wave at him with the toes.
Like you could go like.
Like I can like literally like separately move it.
Oh, I don't like that at
Yeah, my
all.
brother's always like, yo, put those dogs
Yeah,
away.
keep your dogs away, please.
Yeah.
Oh, I never. Yeah, keep your dogs away for as long as you possibly can,
Yeah,
please.
bro, fucking monkey feet over
That's
here.
crazy. Ooh. Okay, anyway, to round it out, what would the title of your autobiography be? If
The title of my autobiography.
you had to write it now, because I know you have a lot more
Like
life to live.
a oh God, the title can be more than one word, huh?
Yeah. It could be one word, though.
What not to do?
Oh. Okay. What not to do? Well, Christine, thank you for being on the podcast. Thank you for helping with changing tides. And I think that's about it.
Thank you for having me today, Matthew. This was a very, mind-numbing experience.
What do you mean?
Wait,
What do you mean it's been
what?
mind-numbing?
Oh shit, mind-opening. Enlightening.
You meant mind-numbing. It's okay. Thank you again, Christine, for being on the podcast and for talking about her mental health story, her past work experiences, all the travel she's done, and how this all kind of combines to create her mental health journey. Again, as I said in the intro, I really enjoyed talking to Christine in this capacity. We get so busy with the work. While we do have a good work relationship, we get so busy about the work that sometimes we don't. I haven't had the chance to talk to her more about herself. So it was really cool to sit down and talk to her just about her and her experiences. So, with all of that said, if you enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe to our show for your ep for our episodes that release every other Tuesday, and you can give us a rating or review on your favorite podcast platform. If you would like to support our podcast and help us grow, you can do so with a donation at the link at the bottom of the episode description. To hear more about Changing Tides, follow us on Instagram at LTSC underscore Changing Tides, or check out our website, thechangingtides.org. Let's continue to change the tide on mental health.
Be careful.